The world and everything in it is made possible by listeners like me. Hi, my name is Diana Matthews, and I'm a 2021 World Journalism Institute mid-career graduate working as assistant editor of a weekly paper in Whiteville, North Carolina. I hope you enjoy today's program.
Good morning. Today on Culture Friday, we'll talk about retailers, sports entertainment, and the culture issue of our day.
And of course, because we're right in the middle of our Collegiate World Journalism Institute, we will open the mics to some of our students for a special Culture Friday with John Stone Street. Also today, a preview of summer movies, starting with Disney's remake of Little Mermaid.
You won't tell him, I won't tell him, and I will stay in one piece. You got it?
Got it. Sorry, what'd you say again?
I'm a dead crab.
And your listener feedback.
It's Friday, May 26th. This is The World and Everything in It from listener-supported World Radio. I'm Myrna Brown.
And I'm Nick Eicher.
Now news with Kent Covington.
House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer says he may soon begin proceedings against FBI Director Christopher Wray.
Nothing's going to change with respect to holding him in contempt of Congress if he doesn't turn over the document.
The document in question is what's called an FBI 1023 form. A whistleblower claims that the document describes an alleged criminal scheme involving President Biden, who was vice president at the time, and a foreign national.
It's consistent with a pattern that we've seen in several other countries where then Vice President Biden would fly into a country during the last year of the Obama administration, meet with government officials, and then weeks later, members of his family would receive through shell companies direct payments from foreign nationals.
Congressman Jim Jordan says Senate Republicans are aware of the document as well.
Senator Grassley has a whistleblower that he deems credible who came to him and said this document exists. Let us have the document. And if you
Comer has reportedly given Ray a May 30th deadline to respond to his panel's subpoena. The U.S. Supreme Court issued a sharp rebuke to the Biden administration's EPA on Thursday. The High Court ruled that the Environmental Protection Agency cannot regulate wetlands that are not connected to larger bodies of water. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre reacted.
The court's decision today aims to take our country backwards. It will jeopardize the sources of clean drinking water for farmers, businesses, and millions of Americans.
But the ruling was unanimous. All nine justices said the EPA overreached. The case centered on an Idaho couple who were barred from building a home on their property. The agency said their land included wetlands protected by the Clean Water Act. The White House also responded Thursday to news that Russia is deploying nuclear weapons in neighboring Belarus.
This is yet another example of making irresponsible and provocative choices. So we remain committed to collective defense of the NATO alliance, and I'll just leave it there.
The two countries signed an agreement formalizing the deployment of Moscow's tactical nuclear weapons on the territory of its ally. Belarus shares a border with Ukraine and multiple NATO countries. Retail giant Target is bleeding billions of dollars in market value amid calls for a consumer boycott in response to its Pride collection. World's Anna Johansson Brown reports.
Target has lost $9 billion in value in just 1 week. Consumers were alarmed by LGBT products aimed at children, as well as swimsuits designed to hide a person's biological gender. The collection includes sweatshirts with slogans like, "Cure transphobia, not trans people." One of the designers associated with Target's Pride collection is an avowed Satanist, who has produced T-shirts with the message, "Satan respects pronouns," though that shirt was not sold by Target. Earlier this month, Target CEO Brian Cornell suggested that promoting LGBT causes was a smart move for the company and, quoting here, "the right thing for society." The company has since minimized or relocated its Pride collection displays in some of its stores. For World, I'm Anna Johansson Brown.
Still no debt ceiling deal in Washington, though both sides insist they're confident it's only a matter of time. President Biden says both parties agree that the debt ceiling must and will be raised.
Now, I want to be clear that the negotiations we're having with Speaker McCarthy is about the outlines of what the budget will look like, not about default. It's about competing visions for America.
Lawmakers are set to leave town for the holiday weekend just days before a June 1st deadline to raise the debt limit. But House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says he's directed his negotiating team to work 24/7 to solve the problem. And House leaders have told lawmakers to be ready to return to Washington on 24 hours' notice to vote on a debt ceiling agreement. Microsoft says it has uncovered Chinese malware and what it calls targeted malicious activity against U.S. infrastructure across several industries. World's Josh Schumacher has that story.
The company says a group of Chinese state-backed hackers called Volt Typhoon is behind the campaign of infiltration, and it said the group could be laying the groundwork for future disruptions of communications between the U.S. and Asia. Microsoft says the hackers have been active since 2021 and have infiltrated infrastructure at locations in the United States and in U.S. territories. China denies the claim. For World, I'm Josh Schumacher.
And I'm Kent Covington. Straight ahead, Culture Friday with John Stone Street, plus a preview of summer films around the corner. This is The World and Everything in It.
It's the 26th day of May, 2023. Glad to have you along for today's edition of The World and Everything in It. Good morning. I'm Myrna Brown.
And I'm Nick Eicher. It's Culture Friday, and joining us now is John Stone Street. John is president of the Colson Center and host of the Breakpoint podcast. John, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Well, as you know, John, it's that time of year again. We have returned to Dort University in Sioux Center, Iowa. We are celebrating WJI's 25th anniversary, and we have our largest class ever. They're listening in, some of them at least, and they would probably say best class ever, but we'll leave that for another time to evaluate. But really strong students, John, they are learning journalistic technique across different platforms. They're asking very good questions, and they've got some very good questions to ask of you. And we'll get to that in just a moment. Sound good?
That sounds great. I always love taking the questions and love that WJI is still such an incredible program for students to take advantage of.
All right. Well, first thing I want to bring up, John, is this sort of on-again, off-again controversy with the LA Dodgers. I'm sure you've heard about this. They were planning for a Pride night. They'd invited a drag group known as the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. But then the team got some organized pushback from a conservative Catholic organization, and the Dodgers wound up disinviting the group. But now they've reversed course, apologized for disinviting the sisters, so-called, and then reinvited them. So that's one, and I wonder what you think that back and forth says. And then second, kind of related to it, John, connected to the retailer Target and its Pride product line. Conservatives seem to win some concessions from the retailer, and Target pulled some of those products back. But the way that Target pulled those products back was kind of interesting. It said that it had pulled the products because of threats to employees. So what do you make of that? That's not a PR victory if the public perception ties Christian groups to threats of violence. That is no net positive.
It's not a net positive, but I'm not sure it actually happened. I think that's actually become a line that Target punts to. And I think actually Target's MO is to, when they get caught on this, that they pulled back and then quietly implemented the same policy a few months later. I suspect we'll see some of that, although let's be clear, Target's been very actively promoting Pride and Pride ideology in various forms for a long time. This is to another level. And speaking of to another level, I mean, the LA Dodgers story is just really something too. You know, to call this group a drag group is an understatement. This is a group that specifically targets religious imagery, Catholic imagery, but Christian in general, and then sexualizes it. So what this does is it reveals that at least a part of the transgender movement is a group of men who have fetishes, and that this group is about promoting those fetishes. This isn't really about a pride thing. If you look at their public performances, they're very sexualized and they're very targeted. You know, this kind of falls too under the category of, you know, if you don't believe in Christianity, why do you spend so much time talking about it? I mean, that's all this group does. This is a group that just absolutely is lock, step fascinated with Christianity, Christian imagery, and Christian opposition to their behavior, and then chooses to mock it and then sexualize it. I suspect the Dodgers will backpedal again just because this group is so extreme. I hope they do. And if they do, it'll be because some of the players and some of the management who have professed to be Christians actually say something about it. I can't imagine that they would ignore that, but maybe they will, and that will say a lot. And all of this then fits into what we might call the theology of getting fired, right? Something right. we've talked about before, that now you have professional athletes that are going to have to make some hard decisions. Let's all look to the hockey players, because they apparently there's a whole group of hockey players that seem really clear about it.
Hello, my name's Tanisha Herring. I'm from Royal Palm Beach, Florida, and I am at WJI this week. How do we reconcile accomplishments of transgender people despite our beliefs as Christians? The big debate now is about athletes, and as an athlete, this affects me personally. And I know that biological men competing against women is absolutely unfair. But if it comes down to other accomplishments, like in the arts and sciences, what do we do about them getting more over people who are not transgender? Like, if they were to get a role in a show or a play, how do we reconcile, okay, they chose them because they're transgender, or are they genuinely more talented?
Well, I think you're asking the right question. And I think that the accomplishments that humans are able to accomplish is because they're made in the image and likeness of God. It's because that is who they really are. And it's completely appropriate to point to those accomplishments as accomplishments in and of themselves. It's not an accomplishment to have an identity crisis. It's not an accomplishment to be confused about who one is and to embrace an ideology that really has nothing to do with, you know, with courage or something else. But, you know, you actually have to be willing to say that. And I think that's going to be the task of Christian journalism in the days ahead. Let me be a little more specific there. I think that is the task of truthful journalism in the days ahead, making that distinction that you're making. You know, this was a historic performance, and that has nothing to do with who one chooses to sleep with or who one chooses to identify as or whether one dresses appropriately or inappropriately. And that's a very different thing than actually calling it as you see it. And I think, you know, for example, Leah Thomas, the swimmer, that's not an accomplishment. That has to do with athletic prowess. That's an accomplishment that has to do with he's a man competing against women. And that is not something then that you high five somebody over journalistically or personally. And you're going to have to, I think, make those really hard decisions and do that analysis. If this is your world going forward, journalism and especially sports journalism or journalism in the arts.
Alex Carbonati of WRSU Rutgers Radio at Rutgers University in New Jersey, currently here at Dort for the WJI program. For someone who is a student radio reporter at Rutgers in New Jersey, Rutgers not a Christian school, very woke, very left-wing leaning, lots of CRT being taught, lots of non-Christian things, and especially in journalism, definitely not biblical objectivity. How would you encourage someone like myself to persevere through those things? And how would you try to fight back against it if there's a possibility to do so?
Yeah, I think there's a couple ways to do this in this world of journalism, whatever form that it takes. The first is you have to be deeply grounded in what's true about reality and what's true about human nature. That's different even than just having kind of a gut level sense or even an educated sense about morality, what's right and wrong. Because the fundamental distinctions here are not just distinctions on how to behave, they're distinctions on who we are. What does it mean to be human? And the sort of world we live in. Are we in a world that is socially constructed, a world that exists because of whatever we make it to be, or are there givens? That's the big philosophical crisis point right now. Is there anything given in the world that no matter what I feel, I can't change? And to be clear on that is first and foremost what you got to do. Because it's one thing to believe what you believe in a Christian environment. And as you've learned at Rutgers, it's another thing to believe what you believe in a hostile environment. It's a completely different thing to believe what you believe in an environment that's not only hostile to your beliefs, but in some situations hostile to you because you hold those beliefs, right? It's one thing to be mocked. It's another thing to be called Hitler. And that's the sort of dynamic that some people, I think, are experiencing in their day-to-day life. The second thing that I would tell you is that you can point and highlight the truth of the world in various ways, either in service to others or in just kind of celebrating good stories that are good in a good definition. So to go back really to the last question, when you do find a human accomplishment and hold it up and ask why, I'm just reminded of a wonderful story years ago where a radio station, since you're representing radio, basically had a contest for original songs. And this 86-year-old man who was a widow for about 5 years who missed his wife had written his wife a song. And it was beautiful, except he sang it and it was terrible when he sang it. And so he sent it to this radio station and they were so moved by his lifelong commitment to his bride, they produced it professionally and gave it back to him as a gift. What a wonderful way to point to something that can only be explained in terms of something ultimate that can ground this emotion that we have called love and commitment and faithfulness and fidelity and things like that. The last thing I'll say, and this is huge, and take advice from one of the great communicators in world history, but especially in the 20th century, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who in his last piece written to his fellow countrymen before he was exiled, said, look, you don't have to fight everything. And I appreciated your question. You know, I should take the opportunity to fight back when it's a possibility. I don't think that every fight is a Christian fight. I think you have to distinguish between what's essential and what is a derivative. And to his point, you don't have to show up at every street corner. You don't have to join every protest. But here's the very minimum. Don't say something that's not true. Don't be co-opted into saying something that's not true. And man, what a lesson for anyone who's involved in language or words or communication. Don't say something that's not true.
Hi, Mr. Stone Street. My name is Mary Harrison. I'm from Southwest Georgia and a student at Berry College, and I'm here this week at WJI. I have a question about perspectives and representation in news reporting. As sports editor of our student paper, I choose which pictures to run on our section. As every reporter, I also have to choose which sources to interview for my stories. When making these decisions, I often find myself trying to balance perspectives based on ethnicity or gender. Do I interview the white or African American senior soccer player? Do I run a photo of the men's or women's lacrosse team on an article that addresses both genders, especially given previous coverage? Is there a time to take these qualities into account when sheer equality of treatment might overlook unique perspectives? Or is any consideration of ethnicity or gender giving in to unbiblical intersectionality? P.S. I saw you at Summit Session 1 last year, and you recommended I apply for WJI. Now I'm here and loving it. Thank you.
Well, Mary, thanks. Great to see you. And I know Berry College. It's the college with more deer than people. And I also am a little stunned and taken back that somebody actually listens to what I say. So thank you for doing that. And I'm glad it turned out well for you at WJI. I think this is actually a crisis that we have in Christian thought right now, because the overemphasis and the wrong framing of race and racial division and the understanding of essential human nature as being racialized, that also then predetermines, you know, one's moral status. That's the problem with the way we talk about race. Another way to say it is the problem isn't that we talk about race. The problem is that we talk about race in the framework of critical theory. So it's the critical theory that's the problem, not the race problem. We do have a race problem. There is a racial history to America. There's no question about it. And unfortunately, in a kind of hyper-polarized, who do you belong to even bring up questions of equal opportunity and access and representation is to then be accused of accommodating or smuggling in critical theory. And I think we're going to have to do both. Christians, of course, know that sin is structural. We believe that about abortion, right? That this is a structural thing. It's embedded in law. It's embedded in cultural norms. It's embedded in the way the media talks about issues. It's that framing that misses that question, that essential question of worldview, which is, what does it mean to be human? And so I think if you can get the question right, what does it mean to be human? And you can then understand where ethnic diversity and difference and racial diversity and difference and sexual diversity and difference. And what I mean by that is men and women, not sexual choices. Then you're going to actually be able to better represent and tell that story. And you're going to have a framework that you're going to be able to tell, oh, this is where a group that someone either belongs to or identifies as matters in the story, and here's where it doesn't. And here's what it means to get both sides. So you have to think clearly in an age of lies. You have to think clearly in an age of confusion. You have to have the intellectual foundation, fundamentally answering correctly the questions of what kind of world do we live in? What are human beings? What's wrong with the world? What's the solution to what's wrong with the world? Whose job is it to fix it? These are kind of the fundamental worldview questions. And if you get those wrong, you're going to get the application wrong. But I think if you get it right, you're going to be able to tell better stories, right? Christianity is not just true because all the other systems are wrong. Christianity is true because it is the best explanation of reality, the best explanation of the human predicament. It gets human beings right. I oftentimes think of Blaise Pascal, who called humans the glory and the garbage of the universe. And, you know, the problem is in a humanist framework, humans are the glory of the universe. In a nihilistic framework, we're the garbage of the universe. Christianity gets both of those things right. Christianity said we're made in the image of God and we act like animals. That seems closer to reality.
All right, John Stone Street is president of the Colson Center. He's host of the Breakpoint podcast. It's always great to see you. Always great to talk with you. Thanks for giving this time to the students today and to the rest of the listenership of The World and Everything in It. Thanks, John.
Thanks, Nick and Myrna, and good to see all of the WJI students.
Additional support comes from Ambassadors Impact Network, a nationwide group of angel investors committed to funding entrepreneurs whose Christian convictions have hindered secular financing sources. More at ambassadorsimpact.com. And from Dort University. Dort's online grad programs help students advance careers while pursuing Christ-centered renewal in their fields. More at dort.edu/grad.
Today is Friday, May 26th. Thank you for turning to World Radio to help start your day. Good morning. I'm Myrna Brown.
And I'm Nick Eicher. Coming next on The World and Everything in It, summer movies. Well, Memorial Day marks the beginning of summer for many Americans, and the movie industry knows at least that much. Film studios save their biggest and best movies for the summer, and this season is no exception. Here is World Arts and Culture editor Colin Garbarino to give us the rundown.
Audiences' expectations for summer movies get pretty high. We don't just want movies, we want spectacle. And in most cases, we want the spectacle to feature characters we already know and love. Movie studios have answered the call, and just about every weekend for the next couple of months, a new film will arrive in theaters hoping to become the next blockbuster. Kicking off the summer, we have Disney's live-action The Little Mermaid arriving in theaters this weekend. It stars Halle Bailey as Ariel and Jonah Howard King as Prince Eric.
I want to be where the people are.
I'll admit, I went into this film expecting to hate it. The follow your heart theme of the original film always struck me as dubious advice. Also, recent Disney movies haven't been great. Then there was the whole Black Mermaid controversy that absorbed social media and Disney's recent tendency to sneak LGBT references into its content. My expectations couldn't have been lower, but to my surprise, I kind of liked it. I mean, it's not the best Disney movie ever, but it certainly isn't the worst.
What more is you looking for? Under the sea.
Let's start with the bad. At 2 hours and 15 minutes, the movie is at least half an hour too long. Disney added 3 new songs by Lin-Manuel Miranda, 2 of which, I'm sorry to say, are totally forgettable. The first part of the movie, when Ariel is still a mermaid, isn't great. The computer-generated merworld looks a tad plastic, and the actors don't deliver their lines with enough whimsy. But Melissa McCarthy makes a decent Ursula.
So here's the deal. I'll whip up a little potion to make you human for 3 days. Got that? 3 days.
Often these live-action remakes stick too close to the animated movies, making me ask, what was the point? The Little Mermaid has plenty of scenes that replicate the original shot for shot, but it also puts a fresh spin on the story. The parts where it abandoned its source material are the parts I enjoyed the most. The setting has moved to the Caribbean. Eric's adopted mother rules over a multi-ethnic island of castaways, and the island scenes have a colorful, multicultural vibe. The shift means that Ariel's dark skin makes sense in the context of the plot. To be honest, it was kind of nice to see a cast that looks like my city of Houston. I also really liked the voice work from Awkwafina and David Diggs as Scuttle and Sebastian.
Hello!
Are you listening to me?
Yes,
You won't tell him, I won't tell him, and I will stay in one piece. You got it?
Got it. Sorry, what'd you say again?
I'm a dead crab.
The movie tries to update the story in various other ways, and some viewers will love certain changes and probably hate others. Ariel comes across a little more noble. She actually pauses to wonder if what she's doing is wrong. Ursula is a little more treacherous. Some other changes bring the movie more in line with 21st century expectations. There's a little more female empowerment. Ursula's lines about how men don't like talkative women get cut, and Sebastian changes his tune too. In 1989, it don't take a word, not a single word, to kiss a girl. Now, Eric's told he needs to use his words to ask for that kiss. There's no hint of an LGBT agenda in the movie, but some viewers will probably still call the live-action Little Mermaid woke. I don't think it's woke. It's just a solid contemporary update with a few clumsy scenes. But whether or not the Little Mermaid sounds like your cup of tea, there's plenty of other movies coming up. In June, theaters will get a bunch of franchise films. Next weekend, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse swings into theaters. It's a sequel to 2018's Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. My expectations for this PG animated movie are sky high since the original was one of the best superhero movies ever. I'm probably setting myself up for disappointment. We're also getting 3 PG-13 movies. A 5th Indiana Jones movie comes out June 30th. The reviews coming out of the Cannes Film Festival aren't great, but Harrison Ford said it's a good movie, and I can't imagine he'd lie about that. Earlier in the month, Transformers Rise of the Beasts plans to once again exploit Gen Xer nostalgia with a new adventure, this time set in 1994. And DC Studios will release The Flash, one of the last installments in its comic book universe before its imminent reboot. If you're suffering from franchise fatigue, this summer still offers a few options.
Meet the residents of Element City.
In June, Pixar will release the PG-rated Elemental, a movie about elements that don't mix living alongside each other. Who knows, maybe the once great Pixar will escape its 5-year malaise with this one. July will bring Christopher Nolan's biopic of J. Robert Oppenheimer, the father of the atomic bomb. But be warned, Oppenheimer is his longest movie to date, clocking in at 2 hours and 49 minutes. Also, Margot Robbie stars in Barbie, but don't let your little girls get too excited about seeing it because it seems aimed at teens and adults. I, however, am not suffering from franchise fatigue. The movie I'm most looking forward to is the 7th Mission Impossible movie, Dead Reckoning, which opens July 12th. Mission Impossible is my favorite series of spy movies, and other than the somewhat mediocre second film, Tom Cruise has never let me down. It would be impossible for me to pass this one up. I'm Colin Garbarino.
Today is Friday, May 26th. Good morning. This is The World and Everything in It from listener-supported World Radio. I'm Myrna Brown.
And I'm Nick Eicher. You know, I think everybody loves these.
The World and Everything in It is made possible by listeners like us. My name is Joanna Mealing. I live in Burnsville, Minnesota.
My name is Tim Berkey, and I'm a real estate agent in Granger, Indiana.
I'm Becky Filipek.
Hi, I'm Stephen Rethel.
My name is Mary Braun.
My name is Caleb Ebnett.
I'm Aaron Hoke, a pastor.
I'm Sonia Bassett. I'm a stay-at-home mom living in Burundi.
Dean Lee.
Deborah Davis.
Emily Hess.
Robert Minio.
I am Jake Swink, and I am a military officer serving in Qatar. I hope you enjoyed today's program.
Our pre-rolls, or more properly, your pre-rolls as the listener. But I am reliably told that the pre-roll cupboard is seriously thin around here, and we need to stock up now.
Yes, we do. You know, it's so encouraging to hear your voices from all over the country, mostly, but also from around the world.
Yeah, so make your voice heard and create a pre-roll, would you? The basic structure, I think, is familiar enough by this point. The World and Everything in It is made possible by listeners like us. Then you tell us your name and where you're from, maybe your vocation. And then you conclude with, I hope you enjoy today's program. So within that very basic outline, I think there's some room for additional creativity. And you hear that from time to time, pretty frequently, actually. Just have fun with it. Then email the audio file to us at editor@wng.org. That's editor@wng.org. All right?
All right. Up next, listener feedback for me. We begin with a couple of corrections. The first one comes from our May 8th program. Listener Andrew Stevens pointed out this particular error to us. In his email, he started by saying how much he loves our approach to the news and the fact that we include a scripture passage at the end of each program. But at the end of the program, we gave the wrong reference for a well-known verse.
So now faith, hope, and love abide, these three. But the greatest of these is love.
The verse, of course, coming from 1 Corinthians chapter 13. In error, we said it was chapter 12. So, Andrew, thank you for pointing that out for us so we could call attention to it and get it right.
Well, next, an error from our May 17th program. We misidentified a soundbite from Ohio Representative Jim Jordan, saying instead that it was Wisconsin's Ron Johnson. Now, we had originally selected clips from both men to include in the segment on the Durham Report, but in the end, only played one. And we cut the wrong one from our script, leading to the mistake.
Well, one more correction this morning. Betty Jo Keenan from Fallbrook, California, had this message for us.
My three boys and I enjoy listening to The World and Everything in It and your stories from around the world. We're always especially excited when we hear stories from places where we know people. One of those places is Bangladesh, and we notice that you're saying the name of the country incorrectly, because bang means frog in Bangla. I've included a little message from our friend there.
Our country name is Bangladesh. Bangladesh is a beautiful country. We speak in Bangla. Bangla is our language. Bangladesh means the country where the people speak in Bangla. Thank you.
That's helpful.
I just love that.
Yeah.
You know, not only does Betty Jo and her Bangladesh friend teach us how to pronounce the name of the country, Bangladesh, but we learn the Bangla word for frog as well.
Yeah, because of our mispronunciation, Bangla, that means frog. Mm. And Bangla is the South Asian language spoken in Bangladesh. And our education continues.
Yes. I love our listeners.
I do too.
Here's one more voicemail that came in recently that was just such an encouragement to all of us. It's short and sweet.
Hello, this is Lester and Bonnie Twilley on the eastern shore of Maryland. The World Team continues to bring us outstanding coverage of what's happening in God's world, informing, educating, and inspiring us. We appreciate all of you.
Thanks, Lester and Bonnie, and we appreciate you. Thanks for your kind words.
Well, that is it for this month's listener feedback. Thank you to everyone who wrote and called. If you have comments to share with us, you can send them to editor@wng.org. If you're writing, would you take an extra moment and record your comments on your phone and then send those to us as well? Especially when we mispronounce things. That was so good. We have included instructions for how to do that on our website, wng.org/podcasts, or you can phone your feedback in. Our listener line is 202-709-9595. All right, well, time now to say thank you to the team members who helped to put the program together this week. Mary Reichert, Jenny Ruff, David Bonson, Leah Savas, Kim Henderson, Steve West, Onise Ohikeri, Ryan Bomberger, Leah Johansson, Cal Thomas, John Stonestreet, and Colin Garbarino. Thanks also to our breaking news team, Kent Covington, Lindy Langdon, Steve Klosterman, Mary Muncy, Lauren Canterbury, and Josh Schumacher. And because it takes a late night to ensure your early morning routine, we thank Johnny Franklin and Carl Peets for that.
Our producer is Harrison Waters, with production assistance from Ben Jiker, Lillian Hammond, and Becca McCallum. Paul Butler is our executive producer. The World and Everything in It comes to you from World Radio. World's mission is biblically objective journalism that informs, educates, and inspires. The Apostle Paul wrote, "Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. What you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things, and the God of peace will be with you." Philippians chapter 4, verses 8 and 9. Let's all worship the Lord this weekend, and Lord willing, we'll meet you right back here on Monday. Go now in grace and peace.